As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Son of Slovenia, cool as hell. He scores the ball and he rebounds well. Here comes Luca.
Welcome to 77 Minutes in Heaven, a Dallas Mavericks podcast. The only Mavericks podcast that's trying to book travel to LA right now, but forgetting how. I haven't done this in a year and a half. It's been a while. This is going to be my first flight. I'm going to be in LA for Game 7. I'm going to be there. It's going to be my first flight since COVID, since the plague. What better city to visit than LA than that? I'm Tim Cato. I write about the Mavericks. We got Law Murray. Law, what's up? What's good, dude?
Hey, man, you're coming to a city that has been very hospitable to the Dallas Mavericks over the last couple weeks.
Isn't that weird that there is a chance the road team wins every game this series?
It's as weird as the bubble last year where there was actually a series, Celtics-Raptors, where the same thing happened. The road team wound up, the designated road team won every game of that series. Of course, we're not talking about that series like this year because those were all, for all intended purposes, neutral site games. But the cadence of the series was the same. It's like you saw the other team's design on the court and it was like, this is our game to win.
Yeah, well, didn't they like Photoshop it on there? Or is all like digital ads and nonsense like that?
Something like
that. I think so. I can't remember.
You know, they had the wall of faces, which looked like something out of I don't know, just one of those. Just I don't want to say science fiction, especially since I didn't read science fiction growing up. But like, it just seemed like something out of a novel that you know one of us would have read when we were like 13 and.
And not
so
a good,
bizarre.
Fun sci-fi novel. Like,
no.
Very dystopic.
No, especially,
like,
when, you,
there was,
especially
yeah.
when you hear the reaction of the players who were in the bubble and how it affected them. It was like, we're playing games in front of faces. There's no crowd. And then you're seeing your opponent after the game is over, just hanging out, you know?
Dude, it's weird. Yeah, that was weird. I'm the only one saying this. Nobody has said this. But I think the past 18 months, they've been kind of weird.
Yeah.
You know, like, more people should be talking about that, but you know, what are you going to do? So I guess I got to beat this drum all by myself. Okay. So game six, the Clippers win. Kawhi Leonard was magnificent. Obviously focusing on the Mavericks, but good Lord, Kawhi, that was incredible.
Yeah.
Any big picture thoughts? I have quite a few thoughts about game six, quite a few thoughts about game seven, but let's kick it to you. What, you know, we're just talking. It's 12:54 a.m. in Dallas time. A little sooner. You. You know, fuck you, West Coast guys. Like, this ain't fair. Like, it's not even midnight there. That ain't fair.
You talk to somebody from the East Coast. I endure some things I enjoy about it, but then these nights get late, man. These nights get late. You're in Texas. This game was a Texas game, so
yeah, you got to watch out for the nights. That's what
That's what Frank Ocean says. So got to watch out for those nights. All right. What's your takeaways? What if you got one or two big takeaways from Game 6?
I mean,
what you got
the
for us?
Most obvious one is I wrote about regression after Game 5 just because that's how the game story looked until the mistakes that the Clippers made and how Dallas just opened up that stretch where they scored 18 unanswered points. And at that point, it's like, well, this isn't about the Clippers finally getting their shots together. This is about the Dallas Mavericks really taking advantage of the Clippers doing bonehead stuff again. But Kawhi, in terms of regression, he regressed off of how great he was games 2, 3, and 4 in game 5. If anyone needed a...
Progression to the mean.
Well,
yeah.
You know, like, the thing about regression is sometimes it's positive, right? Sometimes you regress...
Right, it just doesn't sound like it
should
be. So I like to create a new word and say progression, even though that's not... Like, regression is the right word. It just doesn't sound like it's the right word. So I love saying progression in those moments. But I know what you mean.
See what I mean? I'm playing a road game here. So 77 minutes.
Hey, so was one of the dumb things the Clippers... I didn't actually read your Game 5 article. It's been a busy few days. Was one of the dumb things the Clippers did in Game 5 was playing Zubac at the same time as Doncic?
I know you called
that out. Because that is something I highlighted.
You know,
when
the funny thing is, I saw you tweet that Game 3, you know, that you were shocked that Ty started Zoo for Game 3, the game where Dallas took a 30-11 first quarter lead. And I stole that tweet from my story at Game 3 because I'm like, bro, how does this happen? And like you mentioned, one of your takeaways out of Game 5, you were like, I basically can't believe Zoo subbed in for PG when Paul picked up that fourth foul. And it's funny, man, going into Game 6 this Friday night, I had computer issues. I wanted to ask Ty one question. I wanted to ask him, if Paul gets the fouls and you got to sub him out, one, do you? Because it's a playoff series. Ty Lue won a playoff series because Nate McMillan kept subbing Victor Oladipo out in 2018 in the first round when Victor was killing the Cavaliers, right? So I was like, do you leave him in? Do you trust him? Or if you have to take him out, who do you put in? Do you dare go back to something like you did in Game 5? That didn't come up tonight because Paul stayed out of foul trouble. You know who else stayed out of foul trouble? Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard played nearly 42 minutes, guarded Luka more than he had probably all series long, successfully stayed on him because a big part of team defense is Luka sees a switch, he wants it, he eats. He's literally played two reliable Clipper starters off the floor out of the series doing that. And Kawhi he did a good job staying on Luka and then, of course, being the hyper-efficient player that he was in the previous three games before Game 5. Like, I mean, he needed a bounce-back game. But he delivered arguably his best game, not his most important, not his most meaningful, but arguably his best two-way performance ever, regular season or playoffs.
Dude, he was absurd. That was, oh man, the two icing threes, that was robot stuff. That was mechanical. That was
I didn't wild. See what Rondo Rondo was looking at Kawhi at the end of this one. Because you saw when he missed that corner three in Game 5 and the meme that came out from that one, it's like Kawhi needed a bounce back game, and we ain't talking about who's looking at Kawhi a certain kind of way after Game 6.
Okay, so two observations, or a few observations, and then one big thing that I want us to talk about. One is the fatigue of Kawhi. Luka, honestly, the fatigue of the stars. Luka was also dead tired. There was a very purposeful meaning and idea of attacking him in the fourth quarter, knowing he was tired. That was effective. It worked. I'm a Mavericks writer. I may be biased here. I'm less worried about Luka and again, they have 36 hours of recovery time. They play 12 p.m. Pacific time, you know, like legitimately 36 hours from now. For Game 7.
Yeah, and a time zone change. You know how that affects guys.
I think Luka's up for it because I have watched Luka and he is always up for it, especially when he's had a downer game. Like, you saw him Game 4 to Game 5. I've seen him do this so many times. Do you have worries about Kawhi with the load that he went through and his ability to get up in that same way for game five, or sorry, for game seven after what he did in game six?
Absolutely, 100%. It is my biggest concern going into game seven for the Clippers. Did you see how game one started, Tim?
Right.
Did you see what time that game started?
Right.
Did you remember what time the game started when the Mavericks went into LA with one team coming off of a win on a Friday night and the other team coming off of a loss on a Friday night, and you saw what happened in that game?
I don't remember because I have a memory of a goldfish because time isn't real, but I believe you. Yes, I have vague recollections of game one. You know, the game one that happened 5 months ago. Yes, I have vague. It feels like it's been that long, but yes, you know, like, the early starts definitely, it feels like it's going to play into Dallas's favor. It feels like Luka's going to be up for it. If Kawhi isn't, then yeah, things change.
Yeah.
Just going back to Zubac should not play a single second on the court when Luka was on the court. There was a moment. There was a moment where Lou was going to leave him out there early in the fourth quarter. And a very late substitution. Honestly, a substitution that came so late that I thought the referee should have waved it off. And then Carlisle responded by taking Powell out of the game and putting Cauley-Stein back in, because he only wanted Powell out there if Zubac was out there with Luka. That was a very funny kind of strategic in-game moment. But yeah. Zubac is not going
to
play
like
another.
High school. It's like, go to the table, but you can't come in.
Exactly. I thought that was going to happen for a second. But yeah, Zubac is not going to play another second. He's not going to play a second when Luka's on the floor in Game 7. There is no question about that. I think the Mavericks may move away from Boban, to be honest. Because I think Boban was a effective move that did get Zubac on the court during that decisive game five third quarter run. But I don't know. I think they may have run out of their juice with the Boban minutes.
I disagree, Tim, just because Boban struggled in that first half. He missed 7 out of his 9 shots. He had the sequence where he had multiple point blank opportunities right at the rim with, you know, looking like Gulliver out there, and he couldn't finish, you know. He had the unfortunate loose ball foul where it looked like Mook was hooking Boban.
Yeah, he fouled Marcus by allowing Marcus to hook him. You know, that's a classic NBA foul.
It was a very Boban struggled in that first half, and again, just a theme of regression. He made 3 baskets in the third quarter after making only 2 in the entire first half. They won the Boban minutes, and when he started the third quarter, the first 6:49, those 8 points, they mattered. The Clippers, they took a 5-point lead, and then the Mavericks had a 12-point turnaround in that third quarter. So I would be interested to see if Rick decides that Boban is not useful. He turned things around. That first half was really tough, especially the second quarter was really tough on the Mavericks. So many turnovers, so many missed shots, especially in the paint. But they continue to get non-Kawhi Leonard Clippers out of rhythm. And this was another game where it didn't take a lot of points for one team to win it, but it took a lot of points from one player to put their stamp on this game.
Yeah, I might be wrong. The Mavericks got off to good first quarter and third quarter starts. And I think that is obviously a plus in the Boban department. So you've talked me into the idea that Boban will start. Now, if he's not effective to start the game, he's going to get a quick hook. I think my big question is the Mavericks are... So the Clippers are reacting to Doncic by hard trapping, hard doubling him on pick and roll coverage. How do they get more out of those opportunities? I have some ideas, and I think the Mavericks missed some shots that they should have hit. And I think Doncic will also react better. He will look at the film. He will adjust. I think he's going to be better in game 7 than he was in game 6, where he was still good. He had a bunch of assists, but obviously his shooting was not up to the standards that he's been at both the series and then just in general, you know, kind of where he's at. But yeah, I think that's the big question is how do the Mavericks, if they're going to hard double, you have to punish the team. You know, there was a lot of Maxi Kleber who just does not have a quick enough release and does not have confidence shooting with a defender close to him. And the Clippers essentially got away with it. They doubled off of Maxi, especially down the stretch in that fourth quarter. They doubled off Maxi and they could get back to him in time because Maxi does not have a quick release and he isn't going to take threes in that situation. You know who would? Kristaps Porzingis. And I think the most egregious thing Carlisle did in the fourth quarter was not the timeout. You know, people were upset that he took a timeout with 7 minutes left. I'm not too worried about that. It was actually like there was a media timeout coming up. He was kind of forced. His hand was kind of forced. People were mad that he played Maxey. I got why he played Maxey, but he was also playing Maxey with Cauley-Stein. One of those two big men needed to be Porzingis, because we've talked so much about Porzingis. We have on this podcast. I mean, you've heard and read and seen us talking about it. We talked about it when we potted a couple weeks ago. But Porzingis can hit these threes. Like, no, he shouldn't be taking post-up twos, especially not when defended by Kawhi Leonard. You should, like, he needs to be taking 10 threes. There is no excuse for him not to take a lot of threes. He is the one player who can always get that shot away, can reasonably hit them, and he's the obvious counter to a double, you know, to a hard double on Luka. And I thought it was damn near egregious that he wasn't out there for more minutes in the fourth quarter, especially when the team was really struggling and the traps were coming really aggressively at Luka.
Yeah, there's clearly a Luka tax that is being applied to Kristaps Porzingis in this series. A lot of people, they, you know, you and I talked about this, Tim, going into the series, how Porzingis' injury shaped the perception of what happened in Mavericks Clippers last year. And I was saying, look, the Clippers played pretty well when Porzingis was on the floor. And maybe Porzingis would have helped Luka, but Luka got his numbers. There's only one ball. I think we heard this ad nauseum when the Brooklyn Nets brought their guys together, but the Brooklyn Nets made it work because those guys are complimentary pieces. The issue has been Luka's been so great, but he's got the ball all the time. Because Kristaps isn't like a natural creator, you know, he's not like a playmaker consistently, and he's not the best at drawing fouls and consistently getting to the line. And because he's so far from the basket, his impact is minimized, especially if he's not having the ball as much. The fact that he's taken 13 shots combined in games 5 and 6, no free throw attempts in either game, that is something that I wonder if you can possibly, with your season now on the line facing elimination, do you possibly like not let this guy get touches going into a winner-take-all game? That's going to be really fascinating for me. And hey, Luka, as great as he's been, you can say, man, look at Luka's volume. He's killing the Clippers. Well, Tim, is he killing Kristaps Porzingis in a way?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. You know, Porzingis has, you know, he's talked a lot post-game, and he's been like, I've learned to be patient. I've accepted my role. I'm not mentally bothered by it. The Mavericks, the coaching staff, Carlisle is asking him to be a spot-up shooter, and it's earned him a lot of criticism. Rightly so, because, yeah, you want more from your 30 million player. But I don't think, you know, like, you got to be pragmatic about it. I think right now that is his best role in this series. But if you're going to be a spot up, like, you can be a more impactful spot up shooter, and the Mavericks can try to make him a more impactful spot up shooter than a guy who takes 3 3-pointers. If he's going to be a spot up shooter for you, if he's going to replicate, like, I guess, kind of a 3-and-D wing. Because his defense was solid. It's been really good, I thought, in games 5 and 6. He's been very solid defensively. A 3-and-D wing is someone who also shoots threes. And you've got to get him more shots than the 3 3-pointers he attempted. He only made one, sure. But like that is your most obvious outlet, to have someone who can shoot over the defense, who can shoot over a recovering defense. I don't need him taking shots inside the arc. I don't care. Like, I don't need post-ups for him. I don't think that's the right move. I think they're right. I think the Mavericks and the coaching staff is correct that he doesn't need to be posting up Kawhi. But his off-ball movement and a spot-up shooting, I thought Luka also missed him a few times on baseline cuts where he was open, especially against a smaller defense, because, you know, once he has a line to the rim, like, he's going to dunk over the defense if Luka can get the pass there. I think he only tried one time. He missed the pass in the fourth quarter. But that was open a lot. And so I think game 5 has to be more KP. And it's not KP in the ways that people think of him, you know, as a Nick. And it's not the KP even that he was last year. But there is a good basketball player within Porzingis that they're not using. He has actual basketball talent on the offensive end that they're not taking advantage of. And it's not all the stuff that people get upset at him at not being able to do. It's a totally different profile of a player, but I think it's a profile of a player who can be effective, you know, with the way the Clippers are playing him. And all you want to do is force the Clippers out of these hard doubles so that you can get Luka the space and the opportunity and the mismatches and the isolation ball where, you know, anytime he takes a dribble, he doesn't have another person in his vicinity, even when they weren't hard trapping, you know, they were deeply helping off of them defensively. I think that has to be what you're thinking about going into game six, is that you have to make Porzingis an effective player, because I think he can be. Going into game seven, I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. It's all running together. Time is a flat circle.
Hey,
but yeah,
you did mention that time is funny. So,
but yeah, that's my big, if I have one big takeaway, I think that's it. You know, I think that it was, they just used him so poorly. I think he's willing to be that player. Like, everything he said post game has been about like him accepting his role, him being okay with it, him not having like mental aspirations to be a 20 shot player or a 30 point scorer. He wants to play the role that the Mavericks have for him. And I think the role for the Mavericks, you know, that they need to give to him is something more concrete and, you know, more prolific in the areas that he can be effective.
Yeah. Just a quick follow on that. I mean, the best quarter for the Mavericks tonight was the third quarter. And Kristaps played nearly the entire third quarter, right? Basically two seconds. And he only took one shot and he made it. He did all the other stuff that you mentioned. You know, he's been a presence defensively. He's been a presence on the defensive glass, at least. No one can really be a presence on the offensive glass. I think the best offensive rebounder, not by numbers, but just by action in the series, has been Kleyba. Powell had the best singular offensive rebound. I think you wrote about that. But Kleyba's crashed really well and created shots off of those offensive rebounds. But the Dallas Mavericks got a star performance from Dorian Finney-Smith in that third quarter, in the three threes that he hit, which turned out to be the only ones, I believe, that he hit for the entire game.
Correct.
But he also moved the ball extremely well. When the Clippers were at their most disorganized defensively in the first couple games of this series, what did you see? You saw Doncic see where the double was coming from, Finney-Smith always be in the right spot, whether it was on the wing or flashing middle, and then hitting the next pass. It was a Doncic hockey assist, but Finney-Smith was getting credit, whether it was to a cut or for a three. In that third quarter, a lot of the times, a lot of times is relative. Guys are only making a couple shots a quarter, right? But in that third quarter, what did you see Tim Hardaway Jr. doing? He hit 1-3, but it seemed like Tim did so much more because of the driving, the verve that he played with. That's when Dallas was at their best.
Verve.
Take that quarter
Great
away.
Word.
Take that away, and like, man, the Clippers got comfortable because they were like, y'all ain't doing this all game. Y'all ain't doing this all second half.
Right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominant Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, we'll go to one Clippers thing before we get out of here. There's really three players on the court for the Clippers that game. You know, 45 from Kawhi, 25 somehow from Reggie Jackson, 20 from PG. Marcus Morris was
shot,
1 of 10. Batum hit some... Batum had wide open shots. Like, the defense, the Mavericks defense was good, and it took things away. But it did not take away some wide open threes from role players. Batum and also Kennard both had wide open threes.
Every single one of them.
Every single
from
one.
From three, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, no Clipper made a three-pointer outside of Reggie, Paul, and Kawhi. Do you trust any of these role players headed into Game 7? Like, which ones would you bet on showing up?
That's a heart-stopping question and one that I really hesitate answering. This was an elimination game, and for crying out loud, Reggie has been a godsend, a minimum contract guy, a late offseason signing, a guy who was not in... He was guy number 10 in the rotation when this season started. Ty did not want to play Reggie. Nothing personal. It's just that there were too many guys and that they were playing Lou and Luke Kennard. Reggie earned this 37-minute role that you saw tonight over the course of how he took care of his body, and he was just reliable in a very odd way because Reggie Jackson's game does not scream reliability. He's been the best shooter of what has been an underwhelming shooting series for the Clippers. Those role players have to step up because Kawhi, I mean, you just don't ask for the kind of performance on this kind of turnaround that this Game 7 is going to be. Paul played even more than Kawhi. He played more than anybody in this game, more than Luka, more than any Mav. He didn't rest after the first quarter break, okay? Paul had a really rocky game. Twitter was ready to kill him just for turning down shots or dribbling off his foot. But the way that man played on both ends of the floor, especially in the fourth quarter, was just as important as everything Kawhi was doing as a bucket getter. Paul and Kawhi need help, and Reggie needs help because Reggie, this is, you know, back-to-back games where he's been the guy shooting the threes well. If Reggie didn't hit four threes in that third quarter of game five, that might be a 25, 30-point blowout by the Mavericks in game five. It would have been even more embarrassing than it already kind of was. And it's on Mook. It's on Nick Batum. Not as much Batum. Those guys are grinding defensively, but Mook can't be 1 of 10. He was paid to be the third guy. A distant third, but a third guy. He's got to find his shot. They have to get something out of the bench. 4 points off the bench. Luke Kennard played because the bench was so bad scoring-wise in game five, and they were even less productive in game six. Those guys have to give the Clippers more minutes, more production, and I feel like the Clippers are going to run out of players.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going off the series. I don't look at any player on that team outside of the three we just talked about, the three that we're choosing in game six. I don't look at a single player and think, oh yeah, they're going to turn around for game seven. Like, I'm not talking about their season as a whole. Obviously, I haven't watched
it's
nearly as many Clippers games.
It's not about their season or even their reps.
Yeah, it's just nothing about anything any of them have done this series makes me. Batum's been good defensively. Morris has not been good defensively. Marcus Morris has not been he has moments here and there. He's not like a guy that gets blown by, but Luka mostly has been very effective when guarded by Morris. So, you know, I think they continue to welcome that. He has been like essentially been helping the Mavericks this whole series, I think, on both ends. Like, you know, I'm overrating or I'm exaggerating a little bit how bad defensively he has been. He's not been bad, but I think Luka is very comfortable when Morris is guarding him. And I'm not sure you quite say the same for Batum. And I think Batum's been better off the ball.
Right. Batum's been outstanding. I think Batum's been the best Luka defender. Actually, when I looked at the tape from game one and I looked at who the heck is going to be the guy who's going to have to check Luka, because you can't have Luka screaming out to the LA crowd that a guy is too small as profanely as he did, as proudly and confidently as he did. He was right. There was no lie told. Luka, to my estimation, doesn't lie, okay? So what you saw was, again, Luka has played reliable NBA starters for a good Clippers team out of this series. That's what I mean by, do the Clippers have enough players left? The fun thing about the playoffs, Tim, and I think you'll agree, is they elevate some guys, but they eliminate so many more. So many more good players get eliminated. And who's going to show up? I don't know. I will give Reggie Jackson all the credit in the world for producing the way he's been, because he's been the only guy who's consistently scored in double figures for the Clippers in this series.
Yeah, that's actually, and this will be my final point, but that's, I meant to say this earlier. The Clippers are clearly, I think it is very fair to say the Clippers are the more talented team than the Mavericks based off everything we saw in the regular season. But Luka evened that advantage by playing two of their most important players in Beverly and Zubac off the court. And that is how you balance it out. And that's how a team, you know, that's how this goes to game seven, where anything can happen. And, you know, there's no small sample size in a game seven. If Luka hits 10 threes, then he hits 10 threes. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it wasn't replicable. You know, like we talked about formulas and sustainability and all that throughout the series. That doesn't matter in game seven. Who gives a shit? You know, you just got to do it. You just got to do it one time. So I think that's where it's at. I think it's going to come down to shot making in a lot of ways for the Mavericks. If they can get their role players to hit threes and in turn free up Luka and lighten the defensive, you know, focus that the Clippers have on him, I think they win. So, and I'm by no means writing them off. My gut instinct is actually to say that they do win in game seven. But I guess we'll see. You want to make predictions since I just threw that out there?
I made a prediction when this series started. So
I know we
I have
love
nothing
predictions.
Left to add to that. I've got nothing left to add. I've got nothing left to add. And I'm either going to be justified in what I said when this series started, Tim. I said that it was going to be a seven-game series. It was a very strange trip to get here, but it's here now. You will be in LA, and we will see what happens, and we'll be here for either result.
All right, man. I'm going to go book a flight. Appreciate you hopping on.
All right, I'm gonna go write a story. Hopefully, it's out.
I got to do that later too. So I got a busy evening in front of me, and it's 1:30. So we'll see how that goes. But all right, listeners, thanks for tuning in. We will be back with someone. 77 minutes. We'll have something after Sunday. See y'all then.
Don't fight the future. Please be nice to Luka. Future four-time MVP.
Oh, my God. Oh! Shut it down. Oh, no! Let's go home. It's a wrap, Doug.
Man, that is a wrap.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.